Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
Welcome to episode 55. So, for this week's review, we've kind of found a fitting cigar. We're going to smoke the Rocky Patel 55.
I figured, you know, like we were going to go something with like a clown theme, you know, to tie into the main segment. But, you know, 55 for the 55 to celebrate the man's 55th. Whatever. Let's do it.
The man's 55th, our 55th episode. I mean, it all goes well. You know, and if you go back several episodes, I don't remember what number it is now. You know, we actually interviewed Rocky Patel, so... It's kind of, we always try to, you know, smoke a Rocky when we can. I don't know how many freaking of his sticks we've reviewed so far.
You know, actually, not too many. I mean, you know, I think we've done pretty good, you know, focusing on some of the, you know, smaller, more boutique blends.
I mean, but, we've had three or four Rockies.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've done the Super Ligero, the
like
Sun-Grown Maduro.
The A-10.
The A-10, So, yeah, there's definitely been a few that we've talked about, but...
Yeah, this particular cigar here is part of what they're calling the Artisan Small Batch Series. As Brad said, it was kind of released it to ICPR, but it was for Rocky's 55th birthday. And it's Nicaraguan wrapper, Costa Rican binder, and Nicaraguan filler. And all that's on the label, so you don't really have to Google it to find out what's in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this... You know, this cigar has actually got a little bit of a unique shape for Rocky. I mean, it's almost got that closed foot to
like
it.
A real,
that
real tapered foot and a tapered head as well.
You know, and you don't really see that with too many of the Rockies. I got to say, though, right now I'm really digging it. I'm going to put this cigar at maybe a medium to medium full. You know, basically the entire... cigar consisting of Nicaraguan, with the exception of the binder being from Costa Rica, which is like a stone throw away. So, yeah.
All made at Rocky's, you know, Nicaraguan factory, Tabacera Villa Cubana.
It's just spot on. I mean, it's exactly what you would expect.
I've smoked so much of the Rockies because, like, I've told the story that the Edge was probably one of my first cigars. But I've always smoked his stuff that's on the fuller strength side, like the Super Ligero. So this one being kind of a medium plus is a lot smoother smoke than what I normally get with my Rockies. This is a nice, relaxing blend. I mean, this is a good whiskey sip and cigar.
Yeah, it's, you know, for me, just a touch of spice on the tongue that I pick up. You know, which is always something that I really like when I, you know, smoke a cigar is I, for some reason, try to gravitate toward a little bit of that spicy, peppery note. I guess to me, I'm smoking a cigar. I want to feel like I'm smoking a cigar. But yes, I would say with a, you know, nice whiskey or, you know, a good, you know, scotch even, this cigar is going to complement wonderfully.
And another interesting thing, since it is the 55, it comes in four Vitolas, but they're all a 55 ring gauge. There's a Corona 4x55, the Robusto, the 5.5x55, which is what I'm smoking, the Toro, the 6.5x55, which is what Brad has. And then they have a monster freaking, they call the Titan, which is 8x55. So if you got plenty of time in your hands, you don't want to go anywhere. That one's gonna last you a minute.
Yeah, that one's gonna take a little bit to burn through. You know, luckily it is only a 55, not like a freaking
eight by 60. Holy shit,
60 or 70 or something. Yes. But you know, dead on ringer with this blend here. I'm definitely curious to see, you know, what else, you know, Rocky releases as part of the, you know, Artisan or, you know, the Small Batch series.
It's one of the other cigars that was announced at ICPR is his first Dominican cigar. I think it's called Dark Dominicana or Dark Dominican. I've not seen it yet, so I've not been able to smoke it, but that was one of the new releases announced at ICP. That place. I was up too late last night. I'm not speaking full English yet.
Suck it up, Buttercup.
Oh, yeah, so I got another week of freaking haunted house running.
So, you know, are we going to tell the folks what we're going to talk about this?
Since this is our Halloween episode, we always give you something spooky at least once in October. And with the rash of weird-ass clown sightings like we talked about in Science last week, we're going to do kind of a review of our favorite creepy clowns from movies and pop culture and what makes them so damn creepy. Work on your whole, like, you know, fear of clowns anxieties.
Yes. Yeah, so if you have friends that are terrified of clowns, this is definitely the episode that you want to introduce them to. So...
Oh, yeah, and I've got a good creepy clown story and for the main segment to share that I just remembered. Well, that will be right back.
Stay tuned.
The Clown House is waiting for you, kids. It's your place to be.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's creepy clown time.
Yay! Damn, I need a circus like board intro. Right yes. Creepy clowns. The all debated origins of when did clowns become evil?
Speaking of evil clowns, I promised in the intro that I had a creepy clown story for you. Well, one time. The fear of clowns is, what was it, claustrophobia?
Claustrophobia.
Irrational fear of clowns. Well, one of my friend's wife's...
Is it irrational?
Well, it could be irrational depending on how you look at it. But has a straight-up hardcore fear of clowns. I mean, so me and him both worked at Netherworld at the time, and that night we happened to be painted as creepy clowns. And when we left the haunt, didn't bother to wash the makeup. You know, so we're back in street clothes, but we still have clown makeup on. And so we carpooled, so end up going to his house and walk in. And I'm kind of standing like, because I went down the hall to the bathroom, so I'm kind of in a dark hallway. And his wife sees me and is like, doesn't realize what I'm dressed as yet, and runs up to give me a hug. And about the time she gets to me, she sees my face and like freaking tried to backpedal and like about fell over trying to get away. It's like, I just ran into the creepy clown.
It's almost like one of those bad, like, cartoon skits, right? Where, like, the legs are just, like, doing circles,
yes.
But there's no actual movement.
Like, she is trying to walk backward while her momentum is still carrying forward. It's like a full-on cartoon backpedal to try to get away from me. It was hysterical.
At least for you.
Yeah.
She is probably still, like, relinquishing in nightmares. Like, no!
Traumatized.
I would be traumatized if I ran up to you and tried to hug you, too.
Me, too. No hugging unless we're drunk.
And even then, it's questionable.
It's okay for men to hug, but you gotta do that whole back slap thing. So you're hugging each other, but you're also kind of like, you know, beating each other at the same time, so it's acceptable.
You know, the old friendship, Pat.
You know where that, you're completely off topic, but you know where that, the manly, like where you shake one hand and slap the back, where that came from?
No.
Like medieval, like, you know, knight stuff. It's like basically you're checking for weapons. So when you greet someone that you don't really know, you kind of grabbed each other's wrist to see if you had any kind of weapons up your sleeve and literally, you know, pat each other on the back. You know, it was a warrior's greeting to make sure, you know, y'all weren't there to do each other harm.
Interesting.
Yeah, I find random shit when I surf the internet.
Yeah, so do I. None of it good. None of it good. Hinting how we're at this podcast topic that we've yet to talk about.
Did you accidentally Google clown porn while you were looking for research?
I did not, so that was a good thing. That would have probably disturbed me a little bit.
Yeah, that's something I do not recommend Googling. I've managed to avoid it most of my life.
But you must Google blue waffle.
Oh, fuck you. No, no. Nope. Not going to do it. Anyway, creepy clowns.
Yeah, so, you know, kind of like, all right, it's October. You know, we're both, shit, I don't give a fuck if it's October or not. I love, you know, horror movies in general and everything to that extent. So, you know, I was like, all right, well, what can we tie into? So we talked
we've
a little bit about
ghosts and slashers. So yeah, what's next, like, on the creepy scale?
You know what? Let's talk about some creepy clowns, because kind of by nature, you know, once we touched on that science article a little bit, is clowns are a little bit creepy, like just.
Yeah, and if you don't remember from last week's show, the short version is that basically the reason why clowns are creepy is because you don't know their intentions. I mean, they may be painted all happy, but they could hold something dark. So you don't know if they're there to kill you or entertain you, and it overrides your fight or flight instinct. So you're just kind of stuck in a series of dread because you don't know how to react to the situation you're in.
Yes.
And outside of going to freaking Barnum and Bailey Circus, clowns are freaking creepy. Like, Ronald McDonald, maybe, because he's got a Big Mac for me. But, you know, outside of a circus setting, any clown on the side of a street or anywhere else is already suspect. In my mind.
Nobody willingly wants to be surrounded by children.
That too. That's like people that dress up as mascots. I'm like closet furries. Like, because I'm like, no one willingly wants to be a freaking, you know, fur-covered mascot unless you got a little something going on, you know what I'm saying?
I don't know, man. I could see that going a couple different ways. But, Jesus, dude, we're like 5 minutes in. We have to talk about the freaking podcast topic. Going nowhere, man.
So, yeah, the origins of the creepy clowns. Like, because you would think that they're designed to be entertainers, to bring joy to your lives. But no, universally, no one really likes a clown. So, where do you think this comes from, or, you know, where do you know it comes from?
I don't know. I mean, you know, there's, you know, some talks like, you know, maybe, you know, 19th century, you know, works from some of Edgar Allan Poe's stuff, especially Hop Frog, you know, or maybe even going back to the, you know, 14th century, you know, I don't think anybody really knows the origin of the creepy clown. You know, one of the films that I watched, well, I mean, you know, like, you know, it was freaking Clown that came out. I think it was like in 2014, 2015, depending on where you were or in the world. But, you know, they basically created like this whole Nordic backstory for it that I thought was pretty cool. But, you know, I don't know, man. Like, you know, the thing that I can relate to in real world time, just because I'm a little bit sick and twisted, I guess, I got all like, ooh, I want to read and learn about serial killers and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, freaking John, you know, Wayne Gacy, yeah, is freaking Pogo. That's what really stands out in my mind.
John Wayne Gacy, yeah. He kind of ruined the clown, you know. People already creep out the clowns, but after John Wayne Gacy, yeah, it was like, yeah, you don't want to meet a clown in a dark alley.
No, not at all. Especially if you were a male between, what, like, the ages of, you know, freaking I don't remember the ages of most of his victims now, but
yeah, I mean, that this picture of him in the full clown makeup, that is one of probably the most disturbing freaking images. And even some of the, like, he was also a painter too. Even some of his like clown artwork that he made himself is just fucking creepy as shit.
Yeah, I like watched the documentary, and they were doing some of his stuff. Hell, I think even Ed Gein and a couple of the other, you know, high profile, you know, serial killers. I don't want to necessarily glorify anything that they did. So, anyway, like, there was a documentary where basically this guy was like paying, you know, for them to create art and everything. And, you know, then there was this big moral dilemma. Like, do we really want to relish and reward these guys and, you know, allow them to create, you know, this sort of a legacy and stuff? Like, you know, just kind of the whole macabre, you know, aspect was just like, all right, that's...
I mean, yeah, because the notion of creepy clowns goes back a long time. There's a book by an author, Benjamin Radford, called Bad Clowns, where he kind of gone through the whole folklore and researched the history of creepy clowns. And he argues one of the, like, probably one of the first descriptions of a creepy clown in pop culture, or, you know, and dates all the way back to a Charles Dickens novel in 1836 called The Pickwick Papers, where there's a character in there, a drunken clown. And freaking Dickens' description of this guy, let me just give you this quote. His bloated body and shrunken legs, their deformity enhanced a hundredfold by the fantastic dress, the glassy eyes contrasting fearfully with the thick white paint with which the face was besmeared, the grotesquely ornamented head trembling with paralysis, and the long skinny hands rubbed with white chalk all gave him a hideous and unnatural appearance. I mean, that's like, it doesn't get creepier than that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I was, you know, part of the reading and stuff, I came across this, you know, I guess basically, I don't know if you could really call it an urban legend or not. I didn't go too much into it, but Marlene Warren, basically, you know, in 1990 in Florida, guy shows up. It was a brown-eyed clown with flowers and balloons. She opens the door, shoots her in the face. Mystery still, you know, remains, like, never been solved.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're a freaking... That's why all these, like, you know, clown sightings freak people out so bad, because it's like, I mean, you don't know what they're up to. And even if they do kill you, witnesses are going to be like, he was killed by a clown. I mean, you're not going to be able to get a very good eyewitness statement when a clown, like, goes on a murder spree.
No, I mean, it's, you know, you know, it's crazy as we, you know, start alluding to, you know, probably one of the, I guess, most well-regarded characters, Pennywise from Stephen King's It. You know, I mean, that whole entire town essentially remained silent with the exception of the seven kids.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like everybody else just wanted to turn a blind eye and nope, this isn't happening. And
yeah, kids die, shit happens. You know, that's not like, you know, it's not a killer clown killing everybody. But we'll get in that into the second because, like I said, we've got some lesser known, or, you know, we got to build up to the main event. You know, we got some preliminary rounds of creepy clown action. But that reminds me, the only clown that I will give a pass to that is not creepy is freaking Bozo the Clown. Everyone loves Bozo. That's like the one clown that everyone's like, it's a good dude. I mean, he gave us free shit when we were kids. It was like the grand prize game. I think everybody grew up watching Bozo on like public access or fucking reruns or whatever. But that's one of the things that...
And the younger generation listening to this podcast is saying, who the fuck is Bozo the Clown?
Go Google that shit. I mean, it was like bald head, big ass red like hair sticking out around the sides. That's one of the things I think it made that disturbed people about Pennywise so much is he looked like an evil version of Bozo. The hair is the same. The outfit's almost the same. It's like Bozo lost his shit is what Pennywise was. So that's made it, because it was taking something like safe and fun from your childhood and fucking it up. So that's why he got more, you know, he is regarded as one of the number one evil clowns on every freaking survey we read.
Yes. So speaking of some of the lesser known ones, you know, first up for me is going to be Horny the Clown from the movie Drive Thru.
And I can't listen to that without laughing.
Yes. And I don't know. I mean, it was basically a straight-to-release, you know, DVD and, you know, May of 2007. And I don't know, man. I can't classify this film as horror just because, like, it makes fun of itself.
It's so bad, hardcore. Bad slasher movie, basically.
Well, I mean, basically, you know, the name of the fast food restaurant is Hella Burger. Wonder what fast food chain they're piggybacking off of.
Hella Burger.
You got Horny the Clown as the mascot. You got Hella Burger, and Horny just so happens to have a meat cleaver from hell.
Yeah. And, like, you've always seen, like, it's, I don't know, it's a cliche staple of, like, old movie. The clown drive-through ordering machine where it's, like, actually a face that you talk into. And Horny was that menu come to life. He was a clown, but he had a speaker for a mouth, and his voice is like the talking through a speaker at a freaking drive-thru, the old movie. It's weird.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, it even gets, you know, weirder. And, you know, there were several iconic kills in this movie that, you know, one, like, you know, eventually one of the guys, like, you know, tries to confront Horny or something like that and ends up, you know, with his face in a deep fryer. It kind of reminded me of some of the stuff that we saw, you know, with Jason Voorhees and, you know, some of his films.
I think he did kill somebody in a cafe and stuck a face in a deep fryer.
Yes, like, you know, so that was one of the things that I think kind of paid homage. Luckily, this movie is only about an hour and 23 minutes. It was so horrible that I was ready for it to be over in that hour and 23 minutes, but there was also this slight disappointment that...
That reminds me, what does deep fried clown taste like? Tastes a little funny.
Notice you're the only one laughing.
It cracks me up, doesn't matter.
And that's why we can't be successful, because the jokes are only funny to ourselves.
True.
But yeah, I don't know, you know, I found it hilarious because, you know, the wannabe gangsters that are so hard up and everything in this film, like, you know, reminded me of some of the videos that we watched on, you know, how to shoot like a gangster.
Like, that's always the best, like, especially it's, I don't know, late 80s through the slasher horror movies. You always get the one, like, hard-ass, like, you know, the gangster character that has to deal with something supernatural, and it's always hilarious. And I don't remember what, because, like, I watched a highlight video of, like, creepy clowns, and I cannot remember what movie it is now, but there's, like, one part, it was, like, from the 80s, and it was, what's the guy's name? Is it Richard Hatt? The guy who played Jaws in the James Bond movies is, like, part of, like, some kind of gang, and he's, like, confronting this clown. He's, like, ooh, creepy clown, what are you going to do? Knock my block off? And the clown punches him and literally knocks his head off, and it flies and lands in a garbage can.
Yeah, it's...
It might have been Creepy Clowns from Outer Space.
You mean Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah, that's another one. We'll get to that one here in a minute. But yeah, like, I don't know. This film is just kind of crazy. Like, it's all over the place. I mean, it's very much, you know, freaking... teenage, you know, what the fuck ever. You make stupid decisions, you're going to die brutally. Homicide. Yeah, for the most part. You know, there's...
The traditional
there's a couple, you know, rational characters in here, tropes, yeah, but, you know, by and large, you know, it's, you know, oh, you know, come to find out the, you know, parents did something horrible, and they all tried to forget about it, and blah, 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 like... You know, that kind of aspect of shit, like, almost piggybacked off of It a little bit, I feel like. You know, just with the whole town being in denial, everything from that aspect. But just some of the deaths, some of the food items from Hella Burger, and just the freaking advertisements, you know, you know, really feel like, you know, some of the shit that we would have saw from, you know... Sid Haig, you know, playing Captain Spaulding, like, you know, when speaking he's doing of, some of his, you know, fried chicken montages.
Speaking of creepy clown fast food mascots, am I the only one that finds the freaking Hardy's Jack in the Box guy a little bit creepy.
Luckily, I don't think I, you know, watch enough commercials to know who that is. Like,
it's just like kind of like a, I don't know, like a weird clown smiley face thing. But he has normal clothes, like wearing a suit, and he has like this big round, like freaking ping pong ball type head with a face painted on it. It's just, it's weird.
That is weird. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. Anyway, we're going to close drive-through with, you know, just one of the closing scenes from the movie that just says, have a hella nice day. But another one I end up watching was Amusement. And, like, Amusement was not as clown-oriented as I thought it was going to be. Like, that's kind of been the thing. Like, drive-through was very much clown-focused. Some of the other films, not so much. Like, you know, Amusement was one that showed up on just about every site that I looked at, but, you know, as far as the clown aspect,
that's the Jack in the Box guy.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Okay, anyway, you were saying?
Yeah. I don't know. This one's, you know, kind of weird. So basically, like, this film is told from, you know, the perspective of multiple stories. So, like, you'll see one person's perspective, then it'll go to another character. You see their perspective.
Yeah, kind of like the movie Go that was told by, like, five different characters.
Yeah, and, you know, so this one was a little bit hard to follow at 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, so, yeah, like, basically, you know, Shelby and her boyfriend, these are two characters, you know, Rob headed to Cincinnati of Ohio, like, and they end up joining a convoy. Their convoy consists of like an 18-wheeler, a Jeep Cherokee or something, and then, you know, their vehicle. So, like, you know, they're doing 120 or whatever, and the girl's naturally freaked out, like, oh my god, we're going so fast, like, blah blah, you know. And, you know, the truck driver's leading the pack, and, you know, you tend to think that maybe he's the big bad. Just because they pull over for gas, and, you know, he's like, yeah, it's hard driving alone and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it shows Shelby, like, looking up at the cab, and there's this creepy girl, like, you know, help me type thing. And definitely some Final Destination moments in this one. Like, one, they're driving to back to Cincinnati after refueling, and basically the girl jumps out of the, you know, freaking semi and just smacks, like, into the windshield.
Oh shit.
It's just like, oh shit, that was random. But yeah, basically, you know, Rob gets, you know, they pull over to try to help the girl. Turns out she's still alive somehow, and, you know, the guy in the Cherokee is like, hey, go get that guy's license plate and blah blah blah. And, you know, it's like, little car chase ensues, and then it turns out that the guy that had stayed behind with that girl, turns out he's actually the bad guy. And,
so, like, what was up with the girl jumping out of the semi?
Apparently, like, she was, you know, just fucking psychotic or something like that.
Picked up the wrong lot lizard.
Yeah,
okay, I get it.
You know. So, yeah, I mean, you know, so you got Shelby's story there. You know, then you've got, you know, Tabitha, you know, she's another character, you know, and basically, you know, finds, you know, two of her cousins completely alone, and it's like, hey, where the, you know, hell's the babysitter, and thinks that, you know, the babysitter just ditched to go be with her boyfriend or whatever.
As they do.
Anyway.
Every 80s horror movie has told us that.
Like, she goes into the, like, guest bedroom upstairs, and, like, this whole fucking room is decorated in clowns. Like,
nope, I'm out.
Like, you know, and, like, in this rocking chair is, like, a life-size, you know, clown. Well, you know, like, you kind of see it blink its eyes or something to allude that, all right, this is probably going to be our antagonist. And, yeah. You know, like, a phone call comes in, and she's like, you know, it's the kid's parents, and like, hey, we're running late, blah, 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 how's everything at the house? And she's like, oh, it's fine, but I'm really freaked out about this life-size clown, you know, the one that sits in the rocking chair. And it's like, no, we don't have anything like that. It turns out, you know, it's the fucking killer, wild chase ensues, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who have an entire room decorated in clown stuff, I don't trust. Like, if I was dating a chick and I come into her house and there was, like, a clown motif room, I'm out. Especially if she doesn't have kids. That would be making extra weird.
Yeah.
Got a little clown fetish going on. I'm like, nope, that's a line I'm not willing to cross. Come on, put on this squeaky nose. I think it's hot. No, I'm out.
Yeah, and you know, basically what happens after the clown confrontation is it, you know, cuts to kind of present day, and you know, Tabitha is now in a police interrogation room, obviously, you know, in extreme shock and blah blah blah. You know, long story short, it basically finds out that, oh, you all are from the same town. So then it introduces another character, Lisa. So Lisa's with her boyfriend, you know, looking for a roommate who ends up going into this fucking rundown old-ass hotel, typical, like, apparently he's a health inspector and uses his health inspector badge to get inside, thinking that, oh, maybe my friend, you know, went with this guy and now she's been captured, whatever the case is. Turns out the dude's, like, fucking maniac, and, then all the stories come together and it makes the whole Briar Hills connection and you have the final confrontation of everything. So it was just kind of a cluster, like roundabout, like.
Yeah, confusing as fuck. But speaking of inanimate, creepy clowns, fucking, I mean, legit, I hate porcelain dolls. They're the creepiest friggin' things. But creepy clown dolls are like I don't see why any parent would buy that for their child. It is disturbing. They're going to have nightmares. And probably one of the best examples of that is the freaking Poltergeist, which when we did our Poltergeist episode, we kind of talked about it for a little bit. But yeah, that clown doll in Poltergeist is the freakiest thing. Like, no wonder the kid like tries to like, you know, knock it off its chair, throw it in the closet or whatever. Like, I would not sleep around that thing.
No. And I mean, you know, kind of to piggyback off that, another one that, the little fucking clown on the tricycle in the Saw films.
Yes.
Like
Billy the clown from Saw, and that made a lot of the creepy clown lists. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, being tortured by a serial killer and putting in these scenarios where he doesn't really have to kill you, you end up killing yourself. But the fact that his avatar is this creepy-ass clown doll makes it even more disturbing. You know, it's one thing if you're being confronted by a dude who is like, yeah, this is what's going to happen to you. But that faceless clown doll, do you want to play a game? Is just, I mean, and we have one of those at Netherworld in our museum area. Yeah. It's fucking disturbing.
I love just perusing, you know, looking at all like the, you know, a lot of it looks like it's prop replicas. You know, the other of it is just like, that's fucking disturbing.
Yeah, some of that stuff in the museum is actual movie props from the movies. I'm not sure if Billy is an original or not, but yeah, it's creepy to see it in the case. And I've seen plenty of videos where people have, there was one great one where a guy like rigged one up, like kind of with like an RC car. So it would drive itself. And it's like when his girlfriend comes in the house, it like drives down the hallway at her and she legit like slams the door and leaves. Like he has to call her and tell her to come back to the house. Cause she's like so freaked out. She's like, nope, I'm out. Like fucking runs out and just leaves.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, I guess we could segue into the next film, you know, let's, the Poltergeist Clown, freaking Billy the Clown. Let's talk about Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Oh, a classic of the 80s. If you've not seen this movie, it's like the plot of it is these aliens invade. But for some reason, they're from a planet that they all look like clowns. Even their spaceship looks like a big circus tent when it lands. Oh, and the movie is so weird because they're like, killing people in like classic clown fashions, like you know pranks that you know clowns would pull, and it even there's even parts where it just makes fun of other 80s pop culture. Like there's one scene where they kill this like you know hot blonde girl, and it plays off the old porno stereotype that the you know pizza man comes and no one you know there's no way to pay him, so she has to you know. Pay him other way. So they, like the clown shows up, she opens the door and he's like holding a pizza and she's like, oh, pizza, huh? And then like the other clowns can, he opens up and like another clown pops out of the pizza box. It's just weird. But it's funny. They make fun of all those weird stereotypes.
Yeah. And I, you know, I mean, I could definitely see, you know, on the cover, it's yellow, bold font. It's crazy. That's about the only way I can describe this movie. I mean, you're freaking, you know, wrapping people up in what appears to be cotton candy cocoons, like trying to, you know, harvest the bodies, or, you know, like, I guess it almost reminds me of like a spider. Like it, cause, yeah, you know, you see at one point this clown freaking with this crazy straw. And I've never seen a crazy straw as crazy as this one, like stick it into the cocoon and basically suck the victim dry. Like,
yeah.
But I don't know. Like, you know, it's – luckily I think the film realized that, hey, we want to go for cheesy, and they hit the mark with this. And I think that's why it became such a cult classic is
– I can't remember if it's this movie or that movie where you like – don't they have to like, you know, smash their clown nose to kill them or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, that's this. So it's like, you know – basically, you know, I don't know. You've got one sheriff who is, you know, young cat. You know, he's up and coming. You know, I guess he's, you know, the chief, and the deputy that's been there for, you know, a lifetime is like, you know, no, these are just stupid kids playing stupid pranks. And, you know, I'm not going to give in to all of this and blah, blah, blah. So, like, you know, the fucking phones are ringing off the hook with people like, hey, this has been killed. Like, the pharmacist, like, even calls in, like, there's three clowns raiding my shit. Like, I need help. And it's like,
oh, this is mass hysteria.
No, it's just like, you know, oh, shit. You know, these damn hoodlums done got, you know, the whole town in on this gag. There's no way I'm fighting. So, guy goes and pours himself a whiskey, fires up a cigar, just kicks at his desk, won't answer any calls or anything. And, you know, one of the clowns walks into the police station and, you know, he's just sitting there just, you know, nonchalant, like tries to arrest the clown. And, like, the clown, like, pulls through the handcuffs so both of his hands, like, fall off. And the sheriff's just like, you damn prankster, whatever, you know. And, like, anyway, he meets his demise not believing that, hey, there's really fucking killer clowns out here. But,
never,
you know,
trust a killer clown.
You know, the other deputy, you know, comes in and, you know, finds the clown and, you know, starts shooting him and nothing happens. And then, you know, gets that one shot to the nose and, you know, it's like, oh, shit. Well, it's like the zombies, you know.
Yeah.
For the clown, the nose is the brain, apparently. But
I know a few people like that, you know. You're always picking their brain.
But yeah, I never did get to see the sequel though, The Return of Killer Clowns in Outer Space in 3D.
If nothing,
maybe that's not even out yet. But
yeah, if nothing else needs a sequel or modern day remake, Killer Clowns from Outer Space is one I would love to see done in modern technology. Or what if they go like full, like, you know, Batman realistic gritty with it?
Like, I don't know, man. Like, this film, you know, was kind of crazy. You know, at one point, like, you know, when I forgot the characters' names, but like they escape, like he runs in to rescue his girlfriend or whatever, finds her, and, you know, is like, oh shit, you know, these are legit killer clowns. So they're making their escape, and they shoot them with a popcorn gun. Well, these fucking popcorn cornels, like, turn into, like, these demonic mutants. Like, one of them almost looks like a Venus flytrap. Like, like I'm having flashbacks to Mario, you know, yeah, like...
Or friggin', how was it, Dan Rocky Horror Picture Show, shit, we just talked about it the other day, the Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horrors, yes. That's what I'm going for.
You know, and then, like... The freaking, like, they have a the fucking clowns, like, make a balloon animal dog. And the dog's legit, like, following people's scents and everything. Like, it's just... Oh.
If they remake this movie, it must have Samuel Jackson in it. Just because I want to hear the line, I'm tired of these motherfucking clowns on this motherfucking plane.
But I gotta say, like, I think one of the most vivid scenes that sticks out is, like, this clown, and there's a group of people, you know, sitting on a bench waiting for, you know, a bus or something like that. Anyway, like, the clown's over there doing, you know, freaking, like, shadow, you know, puppets, like, up on this brick wall. And it's like, oh, look at there. It's, you know, a flower, or it's, you know, a dog. You know, at some point, like, the clown makes it a, you know, freaking T-Rex and just chomps the entire group of people. Like, I was just like, it's so ridiculous.
Killer clowns, and I didn't really see him mentioned on a few of the lists, but what about the Joker? I mean, he is the probably the best, you know, killer clown.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I almost put horror movie clowns. Like, Joker's on his own plane. Like, you know, I mean, to the point, I mean, yeah, he does some pretty hardcore shenanigans, but he's more, I guess, psychotic, but, you know, set in, like, again, the Batman stage.
Batman Animated Series Joker, I mean, Mark Hamill could have gone dark. Right? Like, there's a recording of Mark Hamill's reading one of the Joker's monologues from Killing Joke in his, you know, Joker voice. And it's like the creepiest version of, you know, of his Joker. Just seeing him, like, you know, not kid-friendly animated series at all, but going, like, super dark with it. Oh, that could be its own horror movie right there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think if, you know, you didn't have the, you know, like, Batman is your safety net. Like, yeah. You're like, no, we got a fucking Batman. Like, yeah. You know.
Because like I said the other week.
Regardless,
you know,
of how menacing the Joker may be, it's like you've got a formidable force. Like, with, you know, all of these other films, you really don't have that safety net.
It's like I said the other day, we were talking about the psychology of fear. You know, that given that illusion of safety and then taking it away, if you had a Joker movie with no Batman, where there's no Batman in that universe, it's just Joker at his most psychotic, that's a scary fucking movie right there.
Yes, that I would give you, you know. Because to your point, that's the big thing. Remove that safety net. I no longer have that, you know, comfort zone. So it's all bad.
Yeah. Unless it's freaking Jared Leto's Joker, then it's like, just go back to the Juggalo concert, man. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I need you to watch Drive Thru so much. Like, because I was like, I'm pretty sure they ripped some people directly, you know.
All right. As soon as I get a day off again, I'm got to watch that one. But, you know, as we kind of move along, another one of my favorite creepy clowns, who I met in person once, and he was awesome, me the freaking Sid Haig as Captain Spaulding.
Yes, and, you know, I watched some of Sid's older movies as him as a clown. I gotta say, like there was literally one movie I watched, and it was just like him being an alcoholic and like trying to walk to and fro to keep a job, and I was like, "What the fuck am I watching?" Like, it was just
yeah. There's something about him
horrible. Like,
not like the thing I think makes Captain Spaulding creeper is he's not most of the time. Well, and some of the when you see him in the fried chicken commercials or some of the Captain Spaulding's, you know, horror thing he has on the side of the road, he's wearing a full clown thing. But most of the time it's him and a freaking just a dirty undershirt and like the remnants of the makeup, like not even full makeup. It's like he's been wearing it for like a week and it's just kind of all faded. That's one of the creepiest freaking images. That's almost more disturbing than him in like the full clown getup.
Yeah, I mean, Sid Haig and, you know, freaking Rob Zombie's universe, that shit just works. Like, I mean, you know, I think it.
And some of his lines, too, just, I can't remember if it's from, I think it's from Devil's Rejects, not House of a Thousand, whatever one where he carjacks somebody, and it's a mother and her small child, and the kid's looking at him, he's like, what are you, scared of clowns, kid? What am I not fucking funny? And he's like, why do you not like clowns? He's like, I don't know. And he's like, when I come back, you better give me a reason why you don't like clowns, or I'm going to kill your whole fucking family. I mean, it's just so freaking just trippy.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of like the one from, you know, House of a Thousand Corpses, where, like, it's like, but, you know, my friends and I on a road trip, we're driving across county, you know, crazy shit, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he's just like, nope, I don't drive across, you know, country. But if you did, but I don't. Yeah, you're supposing, you know, for a second that you did. You little Dickens, you. I know what your problem is. And y'all think us folk from the country real funny, like, don't you? And, you know, like, his interactions and his smartassery just make shit work so well.
And when those guys come in and try to rob him, too, and he just goes freaking ape shit on him.
Everybody's got to have their boomstick.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's not only is a creepy ass clown, he is gangster as fuck. Yeah, I met him once. There's a year round haunted house up in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. I think it's it might be like Ripley's, you know, part of the Ripley's stuff where it's like it's right next to like Ripley's, Believe It or Not museum, and it's like a year round haunted house. And for I think it was Friday the 13th one year. I forgot, like during the summer. They did like a special and they had to sit up there signing autographs. So I got to meet him and I got an autograph of him in the full clown makeup, you know, shooting a bird. And it says, "To Joe, fuck you very much."
But I mean, I think that's, you know, once again, you know, why that character works so well is, you know, it's not fun in games. Like the fact after, you know, he shoots, freaking killer Carl. And, you know, it's like, goddamn motherfucker got blood all over my best clown suit. Like, I just love that shit.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was the trippy thing about House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, is in a horror movie, you rarely cheer for the killer. You're supposed to cheer for the lone survivor, the virgin that makes it out alive. But in these movies, nobody makes it out alive. I mean, it's, you're actually, like, you know, cheering for Sig and his fucked up family. To like kill them, it's like, you, even though they're scary as fuck, you're like, they're so entertaining that you're like, you don't want to see them stop.
Yeah. I don't know. It just, you know, it reminds me so much of the family from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like how tight knit they are. Like, you know, it's their especially House of a Thousand Corpses over everything.
I mean, it's almost a remake of Texas Chainsaw because it's you can see a lot. I mean, they don't really have a quote unquote leather face. Yeah, because pretty much there's no, like, just inarticulate, you know, monster amongst the group. All of them have something to say. But, yeah, it's you can definitely draw some parallels between the two. And even Michael Myers is a little bit clownish with the white mask and whatnot. And not saying anything through the whole movie. The mimish quality of him makes him a little bit more creepy.
I mean, it definitely plays to that, you know. There is no emotion, you know, and I think that's very much what the clown makeup and everything.
Yeah, you don't know if you're going to get a pie in the face or a machete in the back.
But a pie in the face, I mean, you know, clowns from outer space. I mean, dude, they took that guy down with, you know, fucking pies to the face, like infinite pies.
Infinite pies.
Yeah. Damn, I lost my train of thought.
Me too. I was thinking about pies. I've been like trying to eat right too long. I want some pie.
But yeah, I definitely enjoyed. Oh, you know, Rob Zombie's got 31. You know, a new movie that he is working on, and I'm hoping that comes out soon. I don't think I've seen any release dates on it, but I've loved all of Rob Zombie's stuff.
Yeah, I haven't made plans for Halloween yet, but last Halloween, like I went to the cigar shop, smoked a flathead, and watched both Rob Zombie Halloween movies. They were on like a friggin' back to back double feature, so that was pretty much my Halloween last year. Because I do haunted house stuff throughout the season, so if Halloween gets here, I'm like, I'm not working. I'm gonna relax tonight or get into shit.
Yeah. Or both.
Yeah.
So, you know, as we continue on, another film that I watched was Clown. And I got to say, like, this was probably one of the most interesting depictions of kind of the genre, I think, in my opinion. You know, and hats off to Eli Roth, because I love just about everything that Eli Roth has done with all of the Hostel stuff and everything to that extent. But, you know, basically you've got a realtor here who is, you know, in the process of fixing up a house. He is, you know, happens to be his son's birthday, and, you know, the clown gets double booked that's supposed to be at the, you know, children's birthday party. So the wife calls and is like, hey, we got a problem, you know. our kid's really disappointed that there's not going to be a clown. He's like, all right, I'll come up with something. So he, you know, starts going through the closets or whatever, finds some chest, opens it up, and there's like this old, tattered, like, you know, freaking suit, you know, with, you know, the wig and the nose. So he's like, this will work. So he puts it on, and, you know, that slowly, you know, starts the de-evolution into him becoming full clown.
You never go full clown.
Yeah. And I got to say, man, probably out of, you know, that's kind of the thing is, you know, drive-through was a little bit gory, but, you know, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, even Stephen King's It, you know, those films, the violence was alluded to, but it wasn't right there in your face, per se. You know, it was much more psychological than it was trying to be a gore fest or anything to that extent. With Clown, like, you know, you actually, you know, saw some of the kids, you know, get, you know, messed up pretty bad, and it was in your face and out there. But yeah, I just kind of really like this story because it basically, you know, went back to, you know, Nordic times, and this entire suit was basically, you know, freaking that of a demon. So, you know, the story of the clown was, you know, it would kill one child, you know, in each month during the winter months.
Kind of like, how was it? Cycles of the Werewolf, which became the movie Silver Bullet, where the werewolf pretty much killed one person each, you know, each full moon, and the story kind of progressed over, you know, several months of.
And that's kind of how this came, you know, about is, you know, like, you have the husband who realizes, hey, I'm becoming this bad thing, but, you know, he's, you know, also too, like, you know, he meets up with the guy that created the suit, and he's like, look, I know there's only one way to get it off of you. And basically he gives him this tea to knock him out to try to decapitate him.
Yeah.
You know, so basically, you know,
kill it's almost like Venom. It's a weird symbiote that, yeah.
Exactly. Like, you know, so this entire struggle, and like at one point, like they're at like a Chuck E. Cheese or, you know, type place, and, you know, one of the, he kills this kid. Well, you know, just creates this mass hysteria. That was the fourth victim. And, you know, his wife, like, there's this one girl out in the parking lot that's like, can you just take me home? You know, my parents aren't here or whatever. And the wife is like, you know, all right. And, you know, and the, you know, demon had told her, is like, one more child, or your child's next. You know, so then it becomes this conflict for the wife. So this wife, like, actually drives this girl to this remote cabin to offer her as a sacrifice to the demon to try to get her husband back and shit. Like, you know, so, like, the moral conflicts there to, like, protect your own family were, you know, really kind of interesting.
That's pretty good.
But as most of these movies turns out, she's like, oh, wait, there's no, you know, saving my husband. He's full-on demon now, and... you know, his demise is definitely worth seeing.
And with that, we've teased it. Let's talk about the universally every top 10 list of creepy clowns I read. Stephen King's It, Pennywise.
Yes, and yeah, I don't know. I was a big fan of the band Pennywise too. It's kind of interesting. On my way home, you know, this afternoon, one of the metal stations I was listening to on satellite radio, like, they're doing, like, horror movie montages. So it's heavy metal bands that have did songs, you know, about Friday the 13th or the Evil Dead or, you know, all this other stuff. So it was really kind of cool. But yeah, you know, freaking, you know, It. And it had been a long time since I had seen this movie last. In fact,
originally came out in 1990, and it wasn't a theatrical release like some of the Stephen King movies are. This was a two-part miniseries on ABC, which was very odd especially ABC, you know, Disney-owned, or at least it is now, has always been kind of like the family-friendly. That's where you went and saw all your like, Great Pumpkin Charlie, you know, like, all the, like, the animated Christmas specials and all that stuff were usually on, like, ABC or CBS, whatever. But, yeah, to do a two-part Stephen King horror movie on mainstream primetime TV was kind of odd at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I guess I didn't realize. I mean, I remembered seeing this on VHS. Now, yeah. I think I had seen it on TV.
Yeah, because originally it got a home video release.
You know, like, for some reason in my head, like, I thought this movie was a lot gorier than what it actually turned out to be.
Just the effect. Cause like, I mean, I was 11 when I saw this. And like I said, watching Bozo the Clown and freaking Tim Curry as Pennywise is just the creepiest son of a bitch.
Yeah, it's just really crazy. Like, you got freaking, like, Tim Curry, like Rocky Horror Picture Show. Like, when I think Tim Curry, that's what I flash back to.
Or Wadsworth from Clue.
Yes.
I mean, or whatever the frick his name. Yeah. Tim Curry's always been a great comedic actor, but him doing horror, especially because Pennywise is a clown and he lures kids in with his kind of, because, you know, because that's his whole thing. He's basically a shapeshifter, as you'll see toward the end of the movie. But basically his whole thing is, I eat people, but you taste better when you're afraid. Like, when you're afraid, your body gives you like a full on adrenaline dump. You know, all kind of chemicals are released in your brain to help you cope with whatever's scaring the shit out of you. So yeah, he's like that flavor of, you know, a human marinated in their own fear juices is like the best tasting thing in the world. So he tortures these kids with like nightmares and images that, you know, no one else believes they're seeing, just to get them scared enough so when he eats them, they taste better.
You know, I don't, you know, I mean, I almost look at this like if Goonies had a clown,
yeah,
that would almost be this movie.
It was
because
Goonies meets Freddy Krueger.
Yeah,
it was like Nightmare on Elm Street Goonies, pretty much.
Like, and that was one of the aspects that, you know, when I went back and rewatched this a couple of days ago, that I didn't remember the camaraderie and everything else, you know.
It was almost like an early Stranger Things.
Yeah, you know, I'd been so young when I saw this, but, you know, you've got your band of the seven, you know, outcasts, and, you know, they band together, and they're like, you know, no matter what, you know, we're going to be here for one another. And
yeah, and that was the thing about it being in two parts, was the first part focused on the kids, and one of them's brother gets eaten by, you know, Georgie gets eaten by Pennywise, and that whole thing, like, you know, the
and
kid
I
loses.
Think that's probably one of the most iconic scenes, you know,
where like friggin' kid's playing in the rain, is that like a little paper boat, and he's following it down the road, and it goes into a sewage drain or a storm drain, and he's trying to reach down to get it, and Pennywise pops up and is like, "Hey, Georgie." And he's like, "I can't talk to you. I don't know you." He's like, "Well, I'm Pennywise the Clown and you're Georgie, so now we know each other. We can talk." And he's like, "Well, I gotta go." He's like, "But I got your boat." He's like, "Oh," he's like, "come on down. We got a whole amusement park and rides and everything else. We even got balloons. Like, do they float?" "Oh yes. Everything floats down here, Georgie. And when you're down here with me, you'll float too." And I freaking grabs him, pulls him in the storm drain. So the kids try to take him down in the first half of the movie, and they wound him. So he goes away for several years. So when you get to that second part, it's 10, 15 years later.
It was a 30-year anniversary.
Really, 30. So they were older than I thought they were. So yeah, it's them as adults now, and Pennywise shows back up and starts torturing them again as adults, and they have to go back and finish what they started. But yeah, some of the stuff, all the stuff that he does to the kids is creepy shit, but when it's creepy, but also kind of hilarious, the stuff he does to the adults, because he's torturing, you know, they're now adults with adult lives, and he's psychologically torturing them, but no one else knows what's going on, because he's kind of in their minds nearly. And the one scene with Harry Anderson, you may remember him from Night Court, is in like a library or something, and Pennywise just like is messing with him, like, and he's like being real loud. He's like, "We're in a library, quick!" You know, everybody thinks he's crazy because he's yelling at this invisible clown to like quit making noise, and he throws out all these balloons, and these balloons are like filled with blood, and they start popping and displaying blood all over everybody, but nobody else is reacting because he's the only one seeing it. It's freaking hysterical.
I think probably, you know, as the adults are concerned, probably one of the, you know, scenes that really jumps out of my head is the whole fortune cookie. Like, once they all meet back up at the Chinese restaurant,
they've kind of all gone their own separate ways.
You know, and it's crazy because for the most part, like, most of them are still single. They don't have kids of their own. Like,
yeah, they're all a little bit damaged from what happened to them as kids.
But, well, you know, They are, but, you know, it's also the fact, too, that just like the rest of the town of Deary, they, too, have, you know, somehow chosen to forget. And, you know, so once they meet back up with Mike, you know, it's Mike sharing, you know, tidbits of history, you know, and, you know, slowly the thoughts, you know, start piecing together. But as they piece, you know, those bits of memory back together.
Because a lot of them have convinced themselves this was just a, you know, an imagination or something, you know, something. Kind of like in a lot of the Freddy Krueger movies, the way they, you know, combated Freddy was they tried to make everybody forget about him. Like the less you believe in Freddy, the less power he has.
Yep.
So when, and I forget, was it, which one of them went back, because they, apparently he's allergic to silver, so he must be part werewolf.
So it was Mike. So Mike,
yeah, so he went back and got
never,
the rock.
Yeah, he never left the town.
Yeah, because so. He's the one his brother was killed.
Well, no. Oh. Was it Mike? It was the black guy. So maybe it wasn't Mike. It was...
yeah, but one of them never really got over it, and he actually went back in and found the rock that they used to wound him the first time and brought it out. Yeah, and his kind of like, you know, trying to convince them that, no, he's still a threat. We need to go finish him. Kind of reinfected everybody with the memory of of it.
Beverly Marsh... Yeah, it was Mike. Yeah, so, you know, because, you know, he had, you know, went back in, like, I think like a decade or something, you know, after all of the shit went down, you know, inside that freaking, I don't know what it was. Like, for all intents and purposes, like, it looked like a freaking tomb that, you
know. Yeah, it was like a weird cave or something that was connected to the sewers. Yeah, starring Dennis Christopher, Annette O'Toole, John Ritter, Harry Anderson, Richard Thomas, Tim Reed, Richard Mowers, Michael Cole, and of course we've already said Tim Curry. But yeah, I mean, it was like these are big actors too in this weird movie. But one thing that kind of going back and looking at it now, I'm like, all right, A, you're adults now. Why did you need to go get the silver rock? You probably could have just bought some more silver and made another one. And two, the first time they go after him, they're kids. So they're using slingshots to throw this silver bullet at him. You're a freaking adult. You could have, you know, made a freaking some silver tipped 44 magnums or something and like really done him right.
Yeah, that was kind of the thing is, you know,
they did, like, not, they went fight him with kid technology. You know, I'm like, you're a grown ass man now. Get you a gun.
Yeah, but you know, like, I don't know. I'm gonna leave politics out of it. But these did not seem to be the type of people that are gonna be handy with a weapon.
Yeah, these were probably like, you know, soccer mom and dads, or if they had kids.
But yeah, they were definitely the, you know, recluses. You know, I mean,
yeah,
they were artists. They were, you know,
a little bit liberal.
So, you know, guns probably wouldn't, you know,
guns scare me.
Yeah, like, can you help me reload this?
There's a killer clown after me, but I don't want to touch a gun. That'd be wrong.
But, you know, I think it is, you know, kind of interesting, you know.
Not how... me. I'm going full Winchester, freaking carrying a 1911 with some silver bullets if I'm going hunt creepy clown hunting. Yeah. when they finally, like, you know, because through the whole movie you see him as Pennywise, and occasionally he'll kind of mutant out a little bit, but you never see his true form until the final battle, and he turns into this giant alien spider thing, which is almost creepier than a creepy clown, because, like, if you're afraid of clowns, another high thing on the list is being afraid of spiders, too, so it's like, oh, shit. It got real. It went from bad, like, to worse.
I got my claustrophobia going on, now I got my arachnophobia going on.
Yeah, it just kind of went from bad to worse at that point.
But, yeah, I don't know. Like, it just kind of amazed me at, you know, just how much of a blind eye the town turned to all the bad shit. Like, yeah, you know, even though they necessarily couldn't see Pennywise, like, you know, when, you know,
people are still
Henry Bowers, you know, is out, you know, freaking bullying everybody and everything to that nature. And, you know, it's like, you know, at one point, like, they've got Beverly, like, pinned up against this fence or whatever. And, you know, there's a guy standing on his porch and, you know, he just, you know, nonchalantly turns around, walks back into his house, like, you know, nothing's happening here. Mm-hmm. Like, nope, I'm not going to get involved. Like, yep. Nope. That to me, like, sounds so much like,
to me.
Well, I mean, it kind of almost sounds like today's society, right? It's almost like, oh, I want to be safe, but I don't want to take the steps to protect myself or get involved.
Oh, yeah, like, there's been cases where someone was like murdered on the streets, and people like, you know, apartment complexes, you know, next door, people hearing or looking out the windows and seeing someone being murdered and do nothing. And after the fact, you know, when these people are questioned, they're just like, well, I didn't want to get involved, and I assumed somebody else would help them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's people.
I almost attribute it to, so you have an email address that goes to a group email of 8 people, right? And all 8 people automatically, you know, assume, oh, somebody else has got it. So that email never gets, you know, responded to. Like, that's almost how, you know, so I thought that was a very interesting play, you know, especially kind of like as I see, you know, today's society in a lot of ways.
So as we wrap up the nightmare, what do you think of this 55?
Well, the 55 is definitely not horrifying. It has been good. It's been consistent. You know, it's exactly what I would expect out of a Rocky. I mean, it's you know, had a good flavor. It's kind of kept the same consistency all throughout the cigar. So, I mean, it's exactly kind of what I would expect, because you're, you know, so much of it is made up of Nicaraguan, with the exception of the, you know, Costa Rican binder. So, you know, yes. I mean, this is a good cigar. You know, I would almost say great. I would like a little bit more complexity. You know, one of the things
it's
like...
It's a very smooth cigar. Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of changes or anything, but yeah.
So, I mean, if you...
It's very smooth. This is a good relaxing, smooth smoke to me.
You know, I mean, that's one of the things that I like is, you know, for my cigars to sometimes, you know, have a little bit of varying degree of flavor. You know, this size here isn't bad. If I was smoking, you know, the freaking, you know, Titan or something, then, you know, I feel like I would potentially get bored of it a little bit, because I'd just be like, that's so long on the same flavor.
Yeah.
That.
But at the same time, I feel like I could have this cigar and then maybe have another. Where if I'm smoking the Sun Grown or the Super Lajero, I love those cigars, but after one of those, I'm, you know, a little bit worn out for and might need a lighter smoke. Yeah, if you smoke something heavy, this would be a good follow-up cigar.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is it's, if anything, it is tapered to more of a medium. You know, starting out, I think I got, you know, a little bit more of spice now. Could be too that maybe my, you know, taste buds have gotten a little bit more desensitized now, but you know, it seemed like it had a little bit more oomph to it at the beginning. Now it's, you know, seemed to mellow out, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, which, yeah, because like, so, you know, if you smoke the heavy stuff all the time, you kind of get desensitized to it a little bit. Because I tried to introduce someone to who never had cigars before to cigars, and I didn't have time to pick out anything light, so I just grabbed something that I would normally smoke, and that's a little bit strong. And to me, it's a good cigar, but, you know, to them, it was like, and props to them, they were a trooper. They made it about 3/4 of the way through, but then they're like, yeah, toward the end of it, it was like almost became too much for them, where to me, it's like, that's the natural.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it just has a lot to do. I mean, you and I, we prefer spicy foods that, you know, I would say to the average person, they would be, hey, that's a little too spicy. I don't know. I mean, it's been good. It's been consistent. If, you know, I would encourage folks to pick one up. And if it matches your flavor profile of what you like to smoke, then, you know, have at it.
And with that, we'll be right back.
My mercy, I don't have any, so don't ask me. time for Blowing Smoke.
And welcome back to the podcast. For today's Blowing Smoke segment, we're here with Chris from Warfighter Tobacco. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, gentlemen. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Anytime you're in the basement, you know, smoking cigars is a good day.
That's absolutely right. So let me ask you, when you're smoking, what do you like to have in your other hand?
Usually some whiskey of some type. Ledslingers, yeah. If we can get it. Woodruff if we can't.
Yeah. Ledslingers if we can get it thing is seems to be the biggest problem. So if any of you guys are listening out there, Matt, JT, you know, Rocco, hey, like, we'd like some.
Yes.
Yeah, unfortunately, like most people, we're in one of those states that it is not readily available.
But it's easy to get shipped.
Yes. We have a shipment on the way. So how did, y'all are a relatively new cigar company, and like, how did y'all get started?
Well, like every good story, it involved alcohol in Las Vegas. My partner, Scott Jansen, he's a good friend. We're both avid Second Amendment guys. He's got a company called Silencer HQ, sells guns and, silencers, and, he's an honest man, so he doesn't make a lot of money at it. And he was looking for something else to do. And unfortunately, Evan Hafer beat him to the whole coffee thing. Not that Scott knows anything about coffee, but obviously the brilliance was there. And Scott said, man, I wish I knew somebody who knew somebody who knew cigars. And I kind of said, hey, it's funny you should say that, because I just got off the phone with a college friend earlier in the week who was doing some business out of the Dominican, and his partner, their family, was in the cigar business. And I said, let's make a call. And we're drunk, and we thought it was a good idea. And
that's
kind of
how this podcast got started.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when you're drunk, everything's a good idea. And when you're stupid, you just keep doing it. And all of a sudden, the next thing we know, we had the cigar company. That's really how it happened. It was just an idea, and we were just too stubborn to just not keep moving forward. And, literally we went from zero to, selling in about 9-10 months. So.
That's awesome.
We are very, very young. But I'll tell you what the thing we're proud of the most is that, you know, we're serving a very, very loyal community, a community we believe in, and a community that's not just about warfighter or not just about Army veterans, but about anybody with that particular ethos that is, others before self. And, you know, we just, you know, the reception's been great. I think we've got a good product, and it's only going to get better because we've got some stuff down the line that we're really excited to get our hands on.
Nice. What do you think it is about the warfighter community that just, you always see guys with cigars? I mean, military, yeah, you know, I was never in the military. I was a police officer, but military, police, fire, there's at least, I'd say, half of those guys I run into are cigar aficionados. What do you think it is about, you know, the lifestyle that just draws all these guys to cigars?
You know, that's a good question, because we often have that conversation. And first of all, I think unlike other tobacco products, a cigar is social. You know, you tend to do it with other people, although that's not always the case. There are times where you want to be alone with your thoughts, but it's a, you know, it's something that you have to take time. You have to savor it. You have to do all of those things that guys and girls and the warfighters, you know, everybody who's put it out there on the line, you don't take anything for granted. And so I think it's easy to sit down and then just sort of have a cigar and appreciate it for what it is. but more importantly, appreciate it for the moment that you're doing it. And you know, one of our I don't want to call it a tagline, but one of the things that we realized is that, you know what, warfighters have been doing this throughout history, you know, either to celebrate victory or to, you know, as a sacred toast to our fallen comrades. And it's just one of those things that it just lends itself to, you know, to our personalities. I wish I had a better.
Right. No, that's a good answer. I mean, because that's one thing that I've always loved about cigars is it forces you to sit down and relax. There's no such thing as a 5 minute cigar break. You know, you know,
yeah.
Like with a cigarette, it's all about just getting that nicotine in and getting back to whatever you're doing. But with a cigar, you've got to, you know, set aside at least minimum an hour of your time to you know, enjoy the moment and slow the fuck down.
Yep. And I will tell you, you know, most guys that I know, I mean, I'm sure I smoked cigars before I, you know, before I deployed, but I really began to appreciate them when I deployed, because you need that time to just slow the fuck down. You know, it's, you need that mental, you need to either escape in your thoughts or escape from your thoughts. And it just provided that opportunity and, you know, and that sense of community that we already belong to. So I just, you know, it's, I don't know, it just fits. And I think the other thing is that, you know, especially in the military, is you may not have cigar aficionados, but people have, you know, they've all probably tried them, and they all remember where, you know, they all remember where they were when they did it, because it surrounded, you know, it was in relation to something big. And even if that something big was just taking a break, and we realized, you know what, a lot of people know, you know, remember that time that they smoked that cigar, but you ask them and they have no idea what they smoked. And we wanted to say, you know what, we want to be that cigar for that time. And everybody will remember, you know what, it was a warfighter.
No one ever celebrates a great victory with a salad and a glass of milk.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, not that there's anything wrong with
nothing. I mean, I love your marketing to the Real Men Don't Smoke hookahs, or the YouTube video of you know, the vaping that was hysterical.
Well, thank you. We're going to be relentless on that kind of stuff, because, well, first of all, because it's true.
Yes.
And second of all, because we're not trying to be like every other cigar company. You know, you're either going to like us or you're going to hate us, and we frankly just don't care. But that's who we are. That's, you know, every Type A warfighter has that about them. And that's why I think that we're communicating to people.
Yeah, I mean, I like that that methodology of it. If y'all going to be in the YouTube scene and the Facebook scene, and you don't see, like, you know, other cigar manufacturers making funny videos. So I love that you know, the attitude of warfighter.
Well, I mean, I definitely think it fits the market and the intended audience. You know, for the most part, a lot of your cigar companies are tailoring more toward, oh, well, we want to be the golf club or whatever. But, you know, I mean, Chris, to your point, I mean, if I'm having a warfighter cigar, that's always going to stand in my head. I'm going to remember that. Like, you know, it's not going to get mixed in and blended and construed like so many of the other manufacturers.
And, man, are there a lot out there right now? I mean, oh, yeah. It's a good time to be a cigar smoker.
Absolutely. I was going to ask, you know, as a, you know, small cigar company or up and coming, you know, some of the stuff coming down with the pipeline with the FDA and everything, are, you know, does that seem to have any implications to you guys or anything? Or, you know, is it you're going to continue doing, you know, what you have a passion for and love?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. That kind of caught us by surprise, partly because we kind of just started going, and then we are you know, we're halfway into it, and that comes out. And the odd thing about being also in the firearms industry is that you think you know everything about there is to know about government regulation, because you want to talk about an SOB, you know, you try and get a silencer, you know. It's I mean, they're
been through that one a few times.
Yeah, it's a they don't make it easy. So we thought, hey, compared to guns, this has got to be easy. And then I think the vapors kind of screwed it up for us, because they tried to get too cute. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But it caught us off guard, but you know, at the end of the day, we're soldiers and we're too stupid to not take that hill. And we said, we're going to do this. We're going to figure it out. And we've been fortunate in that, one, in my other job, I'm a lawyer, so I actually could read that stuff and not, you know, shove a pencil in my eye. not that I didn't want to, but, it was a surprise, but fortunately we were able to adapt, and we were able to sort of figure out how we were going to do this. And we've got an aggressive plan and a survival plan. And, we're in it for the long term. I'm confident about that. So as long as we keep being real, and people keep liking what we're putting out, we're going to be in this thing for a long time.
Speaking of what you're putting out, tell us about the cigars. I like your naming theme. Everything's named after a bullet.
Yep.
So what are the three different Vitolas you have out now?
Well, we've got the 5.56, which is a Connecticut Churchill. It was very important for me that one of our first sticks be a Churchill, just because it's a classic, you know. It's the cigar you see in every photo, you know. So it had to be a Churchill. Then we've got the 7.62, which also ended up being a Churchill. We tested a lot of different varieties of the Sumatra, and we thought the Churchill just smoked the best. You know how the same cigar is not going to smoke the same in different lengths. And we just really liked the way it smoked in that long length. And so we kept that one a Churchill. And then the Maduro, we knew we couldn't come out with three Churchills. So the 50 cal, the Maduro, we did in the Torpedo, which is also another classic shape. We're getting a lot of pressure to get something smaller for the shorter smoke. Certainly, like you said, nothing's going to be a 5-minute smoke, but the shorter smoke.
22 caliber.
Yeah, exactly. And we're certainly looking to expand our portfolio as aggressively as the FDA will let us. We just got through a bunch of testers. So we're danger close to launching another one, nice. Probably in the next 60 days. So, that's going to be exciting too.
Yeah. I love anything named 50 cal as a torpedo. That's, that's the perfect, name and size for that cigar.
Yeah. And the bullet just looks so sexy together. I mean, how do you just not like that?
Yeah. They're about it's like almost the same size. It just looks amazing. Just ammo can full of those. So what's the difference between I know you have the Garrison and the Field versions. I mean, is it a different cigar, or is it just packaging?
It's really just packaging. And here's our theory. We've kind of gone back and forth, but the reality is like every warfighter, whether you're a fireman, you're a first responder, you're in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, you name it. You've got a field uniform, your duty uniform, and a dress uniform. And so we wanted the cigar that people would take to the field. But the last thing you want to take to the field is some, shiny foil, pretty pretty stick, you know?
Yeah, it's not going to last long.
Yeah, and so, you know, we wanted to say, hey, it's okay to bring this with you because we're going to be tactical with you. And that comes with, you know, the I don't know if people have figured it out yet, but the field cigars are coming with the hardcore, you know, the utilitarian cases so that you don't feel bad about taking it out into the field with you. But on the other hand, sometimes you want to dress up pretty and have a cigar that is that's appropriate for a celebration. And so when you're in your dress blues, you grab the pretty one out of the nice humidor or out of your leather banded six-pack that you got along with you. And, you know, it's dressed appropriately for the occasion. So in reality, they are the same cigars, but they're designed for different occasions. And that's, you know, that's who we are.
I mean, yeah, if you're at the range or the, you know, golf course or wherever, you know, yeah, who cares what the label looks like as long as it's a good smoke, especially right. Like I said, I like to keep my labels, and if I'm out, you know, in like the hot weather, it's that label's not going to last very long. But if if you're at the, you know, the cigar lounge or at, you know, a nice smoking lounge, you break out the shiny.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the cool things that you guys, you know, brought to the table was not only the cigars, but also the humidors, the accessories, the apparel line, kind of the whole nine yards. So, I thought that was really interesting and, you know, rather unique for the industry.
Well, like I said, we're kind of too dumb to realize when to stop. And so we, you know, we were like, well, if we're going to sell cigars, we got to sell all the kit that comes with it. And at the end of the day, we're like, you know, we like our toys. So it's, you know, and for me personally, I'm a huge Zycar fan. I've been using them all my life. All my cigar smoking life. They're a company out of Kansas City, they're awesome because if something, I've never had one break, but we've all had that cutter that we used just a little too long because that blade got dull and we tore up a cigar. You know, you just send it back to them, they'll send you a brand new one. It's a lifetime warranty, and it's just that's that, you know, because we break stuff and we lose stuff and we need other stuff, and so that's who we are.
Oh, yeah, that's all I've ever used. I'm looking forward to getting that new round one they got coming out. That thing looks insane.
It is. Scott's played with it. I haven't, because he went down to the show in Vegas this summer, and so he's played with it. We've got to, as soon as they get out, we'll have them in. Nice. But yeah, it is so different. That he says it's a kind of a neat little piece of engineering because it's almost like a switchblade, in that when you open it up, the thing just springs open, and then it's on gears, so it's just real smooth. Nice. So it looks like it's gonna be pretty cool.
Yeah, I was like that because I like it too. Because like I've always had the traditional Zycars, and they've as cigar ring gauges have gotten bigger. Like I can't fit my 60 plus, especially if it's a box press in my traditional Zycar, but that new one's a lot bigger ring gauge.
So yep.
Upgrade with the times. So yep. As we kind of wrap up here, where can people find your cigars? Where can they follow what y'all are doing and keep up with all things Warfighter?
Well, the best place to find our cigars right now is at warfightertobacco.com. That's our main hub of business. We have a couple of local shops. If you happen to be in the Lincoln, Nebraska area, we're a big fan of Cigars Bar because they helped us get started, and you can get our stuff there. But otherwise, warfightertobacco.com. We will be unleashing ourselves in distribution here so that more local cigar shops can get us. But that's probably, you know, in our world, it's soon, but it might not be till the end of the year, first part of next year. But follow us on Facebook, Warfighter Tobacco, Instagram Warfighter Tobacco. We're always posting stupid stuff. We're trying to get better at posting better stuff. We also have a lot of good friends who have been really helpful to us that we really appreciate. The Manspot's been awesome. Rocco has been awesome. Evan at Black Rifle Coffee, love those guys. Nick at Ranger Up, you know, they've just all been real supportive, and they're all about helping veterans. You know, can't thank those guys enough for helping us out and steering us in the right direction.
And also, you know, check out the Silencer HQ stuff too. They make some hilarious videos as well. I watched the was it shooting the high point video. That was hilarious.
Yeah, that one was a lot of fun to make. And they have an older one that's actually had to do a drive by with a high point. That's that might even be funnier. But
don't think
like,
I've seen that one yet. I gotta
like
look it up now.
15 seconds long. It's hilarious.
They just drive by and throw it at them. It's about the most damage that gun will do.
It's funny. So,
all right, I'm gonna check that one out tonight. Thanks for stopping by. You know, appreciate having you here. And like I said, everyone go to warfightertobacco.com, pick you up a handful of sticks.
Hey guys, I really, really appreciate it, and we really appreciate the support that we've had. And if we can do anything, let us know.
When one speaks of the perfect symmetry between science fiction, fantasy, and horror podcasting, with a special emphasis on Doctor Who, one should become a connoisseur of Transmissions from Atlantis, featuring JC and Rita Della Torre. While both will have a passionate and vigorous argument on the subject of the day, they do so with the utmost respect.
What? That wasn't Stoopy.
You're Stoopy.
You're Stoopy.
You're Stoopy. Stoopy. And dignity.
Commander Riker here. I'm by the book. Yeah.
Prime Directive Kenigan.
Prime Directive. Geeky.
Join Transmissions from Atlantis weekly at transmissionsfromatlantis.com and part of the ESO Network. Yes. It's quite good, really.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back. It's time for Beer 30. So, what are we drinking this week, Brad?
Well, this week we are drinking Aviator Brewing Company's Devil Tramping Ground Triple. And this is out of a brewery up in North Carolina. And... you know, the artwork here, I just felt kind of really went with our entire theme just because it shows, you know,
Satan drinking a beer.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fitting too, because, pretty much I think most of these like weird, creepy clown sightings that kind of started around North Carolina, and, or at least there's been a bunch kind of in that area. So, maybe it is the devil, you know, come forth, because Devil's Tramping Ground is based off a North Carolina legend. So if you're a ghost hunter and want to go check that out, you know, you can probably Google its location. But it's like supposed to be like a spot where nothing grows, and it's like legendary, like this is where the devil can enter the real world or whatever.
Yeah, so I don't know. I found it very fitting. This is a triple, and... You know, I gotta say, you know, it's a good crisp beer. You know, we just started getting our taste of some of the cooler fall weather. I personally would have liked something
pumpkin spice everything. Yeah. I'm tired of pumpkin spice.
I would have wanted something a little bit more heavy because, you know, for this to be a 9.2% ABV, like it drinks very light. Like it doesn't have much body or weight to it. Yeah. But it's very clean. It's crisp. You know, it's kind of interesting because they actually use some candy sugar in their brew. So you get some of the bitterness from the hops that you would traditionally expect from a triple, but then you also get a note of sweetness. And, you know, that dynamic is rather interesting.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, kind of beer candy-like.
Beer candy. I think we're on to something. I mean, you know, they got like, you know, I forgot. Somebody brought me back some of the candy one time. It's got, like, you know,
oh,
a few
whiskey.
Drops of, you know, inside whiskey of, yeah. or, you know, some sort of a liqueur or something. So, could we do that with beer? Like, that'd be pretty cool.
Maybe. Get drunk off of, you know, fucking alcoholic M&Ms. I'm good. I'm down. You drunk? No, I'm just candy high.
But, I don't know. Overall, I think I'm at probably a 4 on this beer. I mean, it's very solid. I mean, it's... Looking at it, I mean, you know, it just looks so pretty.
Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, it's definitely a very golden ale. And, I mean, I do like a triple, but that added sugar just adds a little bit, like a new element to it. It's
well,
just
I mean,
like a little bit of sweetness on the back end.
It kinda, almost, you know, takes away, you know, a little bit from that bitterness. Because sometimes I get a
like
triple,
a,
and it's like yeah, almost a little bit
close
too
to an IPA,
hoppy.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I want a little bit more of that malty note. Much, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why I like a quad is, you know, you get a lot more of the malt flavors than you do the hops. So
yeah, it's almost like a whatchamacallit? I totally lost my train of thought there. It's like kind of like the sour candies where you get like a bitterness up front and then it goes into the sweetness of the candy, like a. You know, like a whatever Sour Patch Kid or something like that. But,
yes.
Yeah, not as dramatic as the switch from that. But yeah, you get that hop kick and then just a kind of a smooth sugariness at the end.
But yeah, I mean, I got to say, man, this is damn good drinking beer right here. Like, you know, this is something I would really want to try to find during the summertime because this would be a really good, you know, warm weather brew.
Yeah. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. This week we got a lot to talk about as far as video games are concerned. A game I've been anticipating for so long and so many fanboys were just like, it'll never happen. But...
Leisure Suit Larry 10?
God... Have you? All right. So I started playing Leisure Suit Larry back in old MS-DOS days.
Yep.
Like when it was command line based and I was way too young to be playing a game of that magnitude. I think the most recent version I played was actually on the original Xbox.
Yeah, I think they did finally release an actual home.
And just the freaking mini games, whether it be, you know, bouncing on trampolines or just. Traditional lasers. Is there a market to bring that game back?
Probably huge in Japan. That's all I'm saying.
Probably. But no. We're not talking about Leisure Suit Larry.
I mean, this was from the era before like free internet porn. So you had to get, you know, adult topics where you could. But anyway, the game you were talking about.
Your breath smells like an old leather glove. What do? Spray mouth. Anyway, Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, I saw so many people on the internet being like, no, it's going to be some sort of a spinoff. There's not really going to be a Red Dead Redemption 2. Well, Rockstar Games came out, gave us a trailer, and said, fuck you, Red Dead Redemption 2.
Exactly. And it looks... I mean, the commercial release is kind of a teaser. It's not really, you know... show you much other, but it looks beautiful. I mean, it's because it's true next gen graphics. I mean, it looks like you're watching Magnificent Seven or something. I mean, the that's one thing about Rockstar is the gameplay is great, but their graphics are so just breathtaking. I mean, it looks like you're in the Old West. And
I even went back.
Red Dead is, I've always referred to it as Grand Theft Auto with horses. I mean,
yes.
The gameplay is so much similar. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm looking to see. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yes. I mean, I went through, you know, they made Red Dead Redemption the original backwards compatible. So, you know, I went through. Hell, I would be willing to buy a remastered, you know, if they were to release, you know, a freaking Red Dead with updated graphics and everything. Hell, I would buy that in addition to Red Dead Redemption just because the gameplay is so immersive and it was just so beautifully done.
Yeah, I mean, the original and I played that. Mini game the
oh yeah the
undead
undead nightmare
yeah
Yeah, and I gotta say, like, I mean, I love both the traditional game and the expansion. I mean, in fact, like, I mean, it was what, only a couple of months ago that I was like, I must beat it again. And
yeah, I haven't gone back and played that game in a while. I need to pull it back out. Because I went through as the good guy the first time. I need to go back and play it, going full outlaw.
Yeah, just murk everybody.
Yep.
But I mean, I love the freedom that the game brought and everything. So. I mean, you don't get too much of a glimpse into the storyline or anything of that nature in this. Just know that it's going to happen. It's set to release sometime in fall of 2017. I mean, I've waited years for this, so I am super excited that it's actually going to be a legit thing. And some not-so-exciting news. Director Tim Miller has apparently left the Deadpool 2 over, some differences with Ryan Reynolds over, you know, some of the creative aspect of things. So I don't know what that means, you know, as far as its success. I mean, dude, I think it was, what, $750 million that Deadpool made, and it was such a beautifully done film. I mean, any fan of Deadpool, this was the film you were wanting and anticipating.
Yeah. And, you know, Tim Miller, you know, was a big part of that original, and it's such a good movie, but I think Ryan Reynolds just wants to go more comic book with it. Deadpool went far, but it almost didn't go quite far enough in some aspects, and I think, because if you follow Ryan Reynolds on Twitter, he has become freaking Deadpool. I mean, his Twitter feed could be run by Deadpool at this point, because it's all Deadpool shit. I mean, the dude truly loves that character and loves being that character. So if he wants to go a little bit crazy with it, fucking let him, yeah. Just stay, get out. I mean, hell,
yeah, and I mean,
I don't know if he's ever directed anything, but yeah, I mean, maybe it's an opportunity for him to step up and give it a try or find somebody that will just, you know, let him be him and do his shit.
Well, I mean, we've seen, you know, I mean, Edgar Wright, he left Ant-Man after years of trying to, you know, develop that film and working with Marvel Studios and stuff. And Ant-Man was widely successful. I thought it was, you know, a freaking awesome movie.
Yeah, because once, you know, Edgar Wright left, you know, they let, freaking what's his name that played Ant-Man? Paul Rudd do most of the writing on it, and it made it probably a better movie. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what kind of comes out of this.
Yeah, and I mean, we've kind of seen that too with, you know, Warner Brothers and DC films when Seth left The Flash. I'm not going to say that, you know, it spells demise for Deadpool or anything. I mean, you know, maybe this is what it takes, you know, to cross that boundary. I mean, it took Ryan Reynolds a while to push and push hard, you know, to not, you know, be afraid of that R-rating movie. And, you know, I mean, for somebody to have that level of a passion for that character and everything else, I mean, you know, maybe it opens up some waters to, you know, go down that path where we get, you know, that little bit of extra that was kind of missing, you know, from the original release of Deadpool.
Yeah, that and budgetary constraints too, because that was kind of one of the things. Well, Deadpool keeps leaving his bag of guns behind for the final battles because they just haven't have the money for it to film a badass gunfight. So yeah, see a little bit more gunplay out of Deadpool in the new one, because it's probably got a lot bigger budget after it made so much freaking money.
Yeah, and you know, another bit of just a little bit of downing news. Steve Dillon, he was the artist that did Judge Dredd, Preacher, and The Punisher. He has passed away at the age of 54.
That's kind of young too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean,
2016 has been a bitch.
Yes. So he worked with Garth Ennis in creating, you know, so many of these, you know, classic titles and everything that, you know, I mean, it's going to be missed, man. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Punisher is probably still one of my, you know, all-time favorite comic book characters.
Yeah, I'm so waiting for that Netflix Punisher series, which I've still not had any time to watch Luke Cage yet, but eventually, when November comes and I have days off again, I'm that's high on my to-do list. I've got 3 weeks of CW shows yes. and Luke Cage to catch up on.
Luckily, I'm all caught up on Luke Cage, but it's been, you know, a lot of the TV series stuff that's been on the DVR backlog, not to mention that Walking Dead also starts back tonight, so it's just going to add to the repertoire.
Yeah, I'm just not
going
to be able to check my phone until I can get home and watch it, because... I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to have to turn my phone off until I get home from the hunt tonight.
So let's move past the sad and the bad. Let's focus on some good. The freaking Logan trailer that came out with fucking Johnny Cash, the Hurt, and the badass himself. Like,
yeah.
Holy shit, this movie looks like it has the propensity to be fucking ball-busting and amazing.
Yeah, because, oh man, his version, because, you know, previously you've always just seen a straight-up ripped Hugh Jackman Wolverine, but this is almost the because it's been so long since I've read the original Old Man Logan, I don't think it's like straight. It's almost like they've done with the other stuff, where it's just kind of inspired by, not really on that. But yeah, him is old, is just an old man, and his, like, you know, healing powers are kind of starting to fade. So you see him just all scarred up and just battle worn. Looks badass. And that fucking Johnny Cage. Freaking. I got my Luke Cage and my Johnny Cash mixed up there for a second.
You keep fucking up, I'm going to put you in the clown cage. But yeah, I just hope, like, this trailer doesn't elude and allow you to put together a complete storyline. Fox kind of has a tendency to give away way too much shit in their trailer, so I hope they don't do that this time around.
Yeah, because right now that this original teaser is pretty much like, I don't need to know anymore. Just shut the fuck up.
Yes.
I've seen enough cool shit that I'm like, I'm not. And even, you know, Patrick Stewart's back as like a really old Professor X.
So.
Yeah, it's just.
I mean, it looks.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. So up next, you know, a little bit of badassery is we had the Guardians of the Galaxy 2, a little bit of a, you know, sneak peek released, you know, yeah, to that.
Not a full trailer, not even a teaser trailer. James Gunn has been like, I'm just going to hit y'all with a taste.
Yeah. I got to say,
cool,
like,
poster and, you know, just a few scenes, images.
And the images are cool, but I got to say, man, the freaking poster is just absolutely badass. Like,
yeah, it looks like an album cover.
Yes. And, you know, you got fucking little baby Groot, you know, sitting there, you know, hanging on to Chris Pratt's boot and everything.
And the thing, you know, Guardian of the Galaxy, Volume 2, obviously.
Yes.
Just like that tagline.
As if it needs any other title.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that looks like some... And there probably is an album cover that's referencing that my sleep deprived brain can't call it up right now. But yeah, that looked amazing. Yeah, and some of the images for that little sneak peek. I mean, it really just kind of shows you a bunch of action scenes out of context.
I mean, the whole gang's all there, though. Yeah. You know, I mean,
but the one little scene that they have with Star-Lord and Drax. Drax is slowly turning one of my favorite characters. It's his, like, naive honesty almost, that where
yes.
he just kind of just, you know, because his character doesn't get sarcasm or any of that. He's just like, what he says he means. And that whole little speech is like, he said there's two type of people in the galaxy, ones who dance and ones that do not. He's like, do you need a hug? He's like, no, I'm fine. No, and he freaking just hugs. It's the weirdest. It's Drax hugging freaking Peter Quill to comfort him. It's so odd, but it's, I mean, for a wrestler, he has turned into a great actor.
I mean, he's done a phenomenal job. And, I mean...
And then, of course, it ends with the bullet hole perspective of Raccoon blowing something away, and then you see Baby Groot just pop up on his shoulder like some weird pirate's parrot. It's awesome.
I just love their dynamic.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I just hope they do the thing from the cartoon or whatever where it's Baby Groot in a pot, and then he just turns into Big Groot and kicks somebody's ass and goes back to being Little Groot. I want to see that imagery.
Kind of like what they did with Iron Man, where they made him go really, really big. Yeah. He went all the way up. So Another thing that I'm kind of excited about is Donald Glover has been casted to play young Lando for the, you know, Han Solo Star Wars standalone spinoff thing that we still really know nothing about because it doesn't even have a title yet.
If they're going to do origin stories of Han and Lando as young men, I mean, out of all that, I think, you know, Donald is probably one of the best choices for that role because he can do the cocky, funny, you know, funny guy stuff that that, you know, Lando definitely did. The only person else that I would probably could see in that role was the guy who played Turk and Scrubs, but he's kind of gotten a little bit too old to play a young Lando now. But yeah, Donald Glover is on point.
Well, they actually, you know, have, you know, taken the actors' ages and everything, and it's like, you know, I don't remember where I was looking it up, but like the ages of the actors like match the ages of the characters almost spot on.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm excited. I'm curious to see what it has in store. You know, another thing that I thought was interesting, this will tie into some more video game stuff, but
yeah, I want to see Han winning the Falcon from Lando.
Yes.
Like, if we're going to go all the way back, I want to see that that original thing.
So, and another original thing from Nintendo is the Nintendo Switch. And, you know, this is going to be, you know, another next-gen system. I haven't necessarily seen any hardware specs, but this is kind of interesting where you have a module controller so that you can, you know, basically put everything together to have a full-size gamepad, break it apart if you want to hand it to your buddy. It'll have a docking station, so if you want to play on your big-screen TV, or you just remove the tablet, connect the controllers or whatever, and you can make it portable. So it's almost like an all-in-one, you know, unit.
That's an interesting way to go with it, because I don't think Nintendo can compete in the full home system market anymore. They just can't stand up to Sony or Microsoft. Yeah, so they've kind of gone with that, you know, at least since, I don't know, probably GameCube. Nintendo's kind of been viewed as the kids system, because it's never quite as good as the, you know, for hardcore gaming. But yeah, now that they're trying to kind of combine the home system with a truly portable gaming system, where, you know, because that's portable gaming, you know, the big boys have kind of moved away from that.
Yes,
it's hard to put something as good as a PS4 game on, you know, a console. Yeah, you know, and even with, like, say, the PS or PlayStation Vita and all that stuff, they've not been that hugely popular, because you can't go from playing on your portable to playing on your TV and it be as good.
But then again, too, like, add in the added expense. Like, you know, I mean, you're asking.
So with this, you get something, yeah, because you spend $400 on a PlayStation, you spend another $300 on a portable system, you know, to have something that can handle both experiences. You know, and it's going to be better than something you're playing on your cell phone. Yeah, it's kind of a smart move. Let's see if it pans out.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like I said, you know, there's not really been anything released as far as the hardware specs, or more importantly, even the price point. But, you know, the fact to kind of have an all-in-one system without having to buy multiple pieces of hardware or anything to that extent, like, and you know, Nintendo's got some great titles. I mean, I know that they're working on, you know, Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild. You know, freaking Mario Kart is so iconic.
Oh, there's gonna be some fist fights.
Yes. I mean, I was highly, you know, teetering on pulling the plug on getting a Wii U just to be able to play Mario Kart, and, you know, the shenanigans that that game brings. But,
and of course, sometime soon, that NES reboot, you know, that's got like 30, 40, however many games pre-installed, that's should be coming out soon. I'm definitely, that's on my purchase list, because, you know, I've played 64 and some Super Nintendo stuff, but yeah, there's still some of those original NES games that I like, you know, some old school Mario or even you know, some of that original Zelda and stuff. I'm looking forward to being able to play that again.
Yes, absolutely. So, any other news, anything you got?
I did see a trailer, speaking of, while we're on the video game, of the PlayStation VR that should be dropping soon. Apparently there's going to be a Battlefield, Star Wars Battlefield game for it, or a DLC for it or something. But yeah, I saw the preview video of that flying the X-Wings in the VR. Oh my, I'm sold. Like, that's worth the price of purchase alone to be able to sit in a freaking X-Wing cockpit. And
maybe. I don't know. I still think it's worth it to you. You buy it, I'll try it out, and I'll decide if it's worth it to me. Like, it's still one of those things.
It's still so new that I need to see what the game list is going to be, because, you know, VR is still kind of could go either way, but I want to play that game so bad now.
Like, I'm just wondering, like, you know, do you get any kind of headaches? Are there any kind of drawbacks or anything? So, I don't know. I got to find some people and tinker and toy around with it before I can commit to. I mean, it's just gotten so expensive to be a gamer. Yeah. So,
and with that, check us out at our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO network, ESOPodcast.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Please go to iTunes, leave us a review. Even if you tell us it sucks, it ups our, you know, search rating. So please do that. If you need some merch, check out our Zazzle store and RealMenSmokeCigars.com for Cigar Nerds smoking shirts. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Cigar Nerd Pod. And with that, we all float down here, Georgie.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.